this morning is Lawrence versus True Green Land Care.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'd like 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. May it please the court, my name is David Alconich. I am counsel for the appellants in this case, True Green Land Care, LLC, and Carmelo Alejo. For ease of reference, I'll refer to True Green and Mr. Alejo as either the appellants or as True Green, since there was no dispute in the underlying trial that Mr. Alejo was acting, was the driver of the vehicle and was acting within the scope of his employment. This case finds itself on appeal after a trial through verdict and through post-trial motions. At trial, this was an admitted liability case. True Green admitted there was an accident, admitted there was negligence, conceded that Ms. Lawrence was entitled to damages, and further conceded that she was entitled to damages for an injury that she sustained during that accident to her neck and her upper back. The trial was therefore necessary to determine the appropriate measure of damages and was there to determine whether or not the lower back injury that Ms. Lawrence claimed she suffered was actually as a result of the accident or as a result of a pre-existing condition and or some type of degenerative condition of the lumbar region. On appeal, there are numerous assignments of error relating to both jury instructions and evidentiary issues. And if the court wouldn't mind, I will proceed forward with the jury instruction assignments of error. The court erred in giving instruction number 10, which is the instruction relating to the measure of damages, because it asked the jury to consider the nature and extent of Ms. Lawrence's injuries as a separate line item element from the actual elements of damages themselves. That is, in asking the jury to consider what non-economic damages were appropriate, the court gave the jury an instruction with four elements. The first element was for the jury to consider the nature and extent of her injuries. And then the second, third, and fourth were to consider the disability that she suffered, the loss of enjoyment of life, and the pain and suffering that she suffered and would with reasonable probability would suffer on a going forward basis. The problem with this instruction is that it allows the jury to award essentially double damages. It allows the jury to consider both the nature and extent as a separate item or a separate element from those elements that make up damages awards themselves. So any award for disability, pain and suffering, and loss of enjoyment of life would necessarily be based on the nature and extent of her injuries. Or I guess to say it a different way, the jury can't award damages for the element nature and extent of injuries without also considering disability, pain and suffering, and loss of enjoyment of life. And here, there's no authority in Washington with the Supreme Court or Court of Appeals that analyzes this jury instruction whether or not it's a double damage award, or at least allows for the possibility of a double damage award. There are other jurisdictions, I've cited those in the brief, that have come to that conclusion and have revised their instructions accordingly.
The leading authority you rely on, the Powers case, has this comment in it which seems to undercut your argument, and that is that the court there stated that except for the listing of the nature, extent, and duration of the injury on the verdict form as an element for compensation, and the verdict form in that case was different than the verdict form here, and that there were line items on the verdict form for each of the elements in the accompanying damage instruction. Here, the verdict form only identified past and future economic damages and past and future non-economic damages and did not include a line item for the nature and extent. And Powers seems to suggest simply telling the jury that they can consider the nature and extent is okay as long as the verdict form itself doesn't include a line item.
Well, what Illinois ultimately did, Your Honor, was change that jury instruction so that it was an introductory paragraph. and asking them to consider the nature and extent of the injuries, they can consider these subsequent elements. That's different than here.
Does the Washington instruction have the same practical effect, since the jury is told in one instruction, consider these things, and then it's given a form with line items that only include the ones I've described?
Well, I think that's part of the problem with the instruction, is we just don't know what's going on in the jurors' minds at that time. In the Powers case,
they only gave $60,000 in total for non-economic damages out of a verdict that totaled over $1.2 million. So the nature and extent didn't play a very large role in their consideration.
No, it showed that the jury was skeptical of her pain and suffering. But whether it's a $5,000, $10,000, whatever that amount is, if it's a double damage award, it's still a double damage award.
Would you have complete relief if we order a remitter of $60,000?
Well, the jury, we don't know how that instruction would have affected.
Well, tell me how it could possibly have affected past economic or future economic damages.
Well, it couldn't have affected past economic damages, no.
And how could it have affected future economic damages?
Well, that instruction is narrow. It is a instruction that deals with non-economic damages by itself. Although,
right, and so it necessarily wouldn't be involved in calculating economic damages, wouldn't you agree?
I would.
So how does it affect either one of the economic damage awards?
Well, Your Honor, as I understand the case law, when the jury instructions are given that are improper, it goes back to the jury for them to reconsider as a whole, because jury instructions have to be taken as a whole.
It depends on how they're improper, doesn't it?
It may, Your Honor. It may determine that.
And if the only flaw in these instructions is it let the jury double count for non-economic damages, why would not eliminating all of the non-economic damages give you more relief than you probably would be entitled to?
Your Honor, that is certainly one way that the court could go. Considering the other errors with respect to jury instructions, we would ask the court to send it back for reconsideration with the trial court. Moving on to the second assignment of error, the trial court erred in failing to accept the appellant's proposed jury instruction number 4, which limited the purposes of non-admitted evidence upon which the respondent's experts relied.
How does a jury know about non-admitted evidence?
Well,
the content of it, is other than its existence.
Well, that's exactly why there should have been a limited jury instruction, to tell the jury what they heard so that the jury can understand what weight to give that information, and to understand that that weight by itself isn't substantive evidence, but instead can only be used to weigh the opinion of the expert.
You'll have 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Jerry Pearson. I'm here on behalf of Rebecca Lawrence, who, as the court is aware, was injured in this rear-end crash, had, at the time of trial, was 33 years old, had a spinal implanted device, 2 spinal surgeries, and had more than $250,000 in treatment expenses at the time of trial. The dynamics of the trial, I think, are reflected in some of the rhetoric in the briefing. I would limit my comments really to one or two very specific items. First, it's very easy to go into a courtroom in a trial environment and talk about principles of safety and responsibility. There's a lot of dynamics with regard to evidence, a lot of dynamics with regard to sidebars, discussions, and this case was certainly very, very strongly argued on both sides, I think. The decision of the jury, though, as the court has pointed out, to award non-economic damages in very modest amounts really reflects the fact that there was no overt prejudice in any regard or inflammatory result on the plaintiff's side. It's also of interest to note that the exhibits offered by the defense into evidence are really the basis for the economic past damages and the economic future damages. So that really addresses, I think, the magnitude of the award. Again, a woman 33 years old, rearing crash, and a variety of topics.
Saying the jury adopted a defense expert's numbers?
Well, I think essentially, Judge, what happened is the plaintiff's experts were challenged with regard to their analysis of life care plan and the economic implications, and the defense counsel decided to go ahead and put the reports into evidence not offered by the plaintiff, and that apparently was the foundation for at least part of the award.
The defense put in the plaintiff's experts'
reports.
That's
right, sir. Yes. Yes, and to a large extent, that is the our sort of counterpoint to the argument that this was an outrageous, inflammatory plaintiff's result. Our briefing really addresses the record, and to the extent issues have been preserved for argument on appeal. The only other comment I have is this, and that is that the dynamics of the trial must, in fact, be set aside emotionally as to what we went through to a large extent, and we have to look at the record. And when counsel is making specific arguments and arguing that those issues should be subject to this court's review, and that should justify a reversal of this, we completely rely on the record for the presence or absence of those decisions. The dominant standard is going to be an abuse of discretion with regard to the court's rulings in this matter. Other than that, the court trial judge relied on evidence rules, Tegeland authorities, and relied on the Washington pattern instructions. And we think that's a sound and principled basis for the plaintiff's result. Thank you.
Thank you. To continue, response counsel discusses the life care planner and mentioned that the reports had been introduced by defense counsel. It is noted briefly in both of our briefs that the reason that occurred was because with Mr. Moss, the economist, that report was not previously provided until actually during his testimony. And with respect to...
What relief did you ask the trial court for when you got the late report?
At that point, trial counsel did not ask for relief. It was only in post-trial motions.
Isn't that a day late?
The court could come to that conclusion with respect to those two expert reports. But with respect to the limiting instruction, which is where this life care planner testimony really comes into play when we're talking about future economic future damages, is that she took into consideration conversations with the Dr. Lynch in Arizona. And those conversations with Dr. Lynch in Arizona formed a large part the basis of her opinion relating to what future care would be necessary for Ms. Lawrence on a going forward basis.
Did she testify as to the substance of her conversations with Dr. Lynch?
I believe she did as a foundation for her expert opinion.
Did she testify to the substance, or did she testify to the fact that she'd had those conversations and they informed her opinion?
With respect to narrowing that, Your Honor,
there's a big difference between the two.
Yeah, well, she did discuss at trial that she learned what she learned from Dr. Lynch, and that she learned, for example, with respect to medical care, that she had new medication that she was on, which had increased. I mean, it had gone from $800 to somewhere around $3,000.
Is there any objection to anything that would have been hearsay in the life care witness's testimony at trial?
No, Your Honor, because there didn't need to be at that point. That testimony is relevant under 703 to form the basis of an expert's opinion. There doesn't need to be an expert at that point.
We have a body of law in Washington that doesn't allow an expert simply to repeat hearsay and merely to identify the sources of information for giving the opinion. You can't use the expert simply to bring in the testimony of people you don't call.
Which is, I think, part of the problem here, because
Dr.
Lynch
wasn't
an expert.
There wasn't any objection to what the person testified to, was there?
No. What came, Your Honor, was a request for a jury instruction that would inform the jury how to use this other information.
Instruction begins by saying, I, the judge, allowed experts to testify to evidence that may not have been admitted in evidence, which brings us back to Judge Leach's question. How's the jury supposed to know which is which?
Well, that would lead to argument.
Thank you,
Thank
counsel.
You.